True Faith, the long-awaited meeting of the master and his students, seekers of knowledge, took place in a small, cozy park, in a small southern town where winter never comes, and it's warm all year round. Sitting in a semicircle, right on the lush green grass, men and women eagerly awaited the teacher, because the topic he would address today was as important as anything else. Faith. The atmosphere was truly delightful, with the scent of bananas, coconuts, and citrus fruits adding to the already excellent mood. The fruit trees surrounding the gathering hinted that paradise could exist on Earth. Seated at the center of this improvised lecture area, the keeper greeted his students. The conversation began. The hearts of the people who had come seeking answers to their questions were open to new knowledge. The first to turn to the bearer of truth was David, a short-haired young man dressed in orange attire. This slender, slightly dreamy youth with a clear gaze and cute freckles on his cheeks tried never to miss any of the master's seminars and always sat as close as possible to absorb every word.
Great teacher, how can someone who hasn't embarked on a spiritual path yet and doesn't feel subtle energies and vibrations distinguish pseudo-teachings from truly spiritual teachings?
David asked with a tremor in his voice.
My beloved students.
The keeper of knowledge addressed the people sitting in the meadow. His voice carried wisdom and tranquility. With his first words, it felt like rays of sunlight touched those gathered, warming them and filling them with light.
A person who is just beginning their journey or searching for themselves should strive to gather as much information as possible. In this way, they can start to direct themselves. Otherwise, they might fall prey to the dark powers that could brainwash them, saying, go to church, you see? The king and the monk pray there, so going to church is good, and everyone should go. However, it's not only the dark powers that can lead one astray. Novices can become easy targets for charlatans or defilers, promoting some trendy movement related to meditation and so on.
David listened to the sage with gratitude and respect, but his furrowed brows and internal contemplation showed that he still had doubts or questions. The keeper sent an energy of goodness and love to the young man, as if embracing him. He saw the thirst for knowledge awakening in people's souls and their desire to touch the highest emotions through the comprehension of ancient wisdom. He tried to assist them on this path, feeling the acceptance and love emanating from the master. David decided to continue the dialogue.
Thank you, Keeper, for helping me understand the truth.
He said with a sense of realization.
I have another important question. What is true faith? I seem to grasp it, but I can't quite formulate this concept for myself.
My heart rejoices when you ask such profound questions.
The wisest one said and continued his explanation.
There are notions of faith and unbelief. When a person lacks faith, they are doomed because they can't find a way out of their situation or a solution to their problems. They can't find light. However, someone who believes always has a chance because they continue to seek, make efforts, and won't rest until they find a solution. Remember, doubting Thomas said to Jesus, "Unless I see the wounds and feel them, I will not believe that you have risen." To which Jesus replied, "Thomas, do not be unbelieving, but believing."
So if a person constantly doubts, they cut off the possibility of finding a way out, finding the right path for themselves. In the end, they may fall into despair, lose their strength, and ultimately even perish. After all, doubt is connected with disbelief. Did I understand correctly, teacher?
The young man clarified.
That's right, David.
The master nodded in appreciation to the inquirer, giving him a warm look. He loved curious students and continued.
This is the first aspect about faith and disbelief. There is a second meaning of faith that Christ often spoke about in the gospel while healing people. Your faith has saved you. True faith is a connection with the divine. To a person with such strong faith, God, angels, and the bright spirits always come to help and can save in any situation.
I understand, teacher, that it is very important to have a connection with higher powers,
David thanked.
But please tell me how to establish it. How to strengthen one's faith?
When we turn to the higher powers, our interaction is strengthened at that moment. If we pray merely with our intellect, like parrots, repeating words without meaning.
The keeper mimicked someone banging their head against a book, eliciting laughter from those present.
That's not good. Such a prayer won't help, because first and foremost, our heart should be involved in the contact. The intellect only helps with attunement, and then elevated emotions must come into play. If they arise, the connection with the higher is immediately established.
How can I tell if elevated emotions have awakened within me?
Asked the blonde girl Maria, with a fashionable asymmetrical haircut and cheerful blue eyes. She had attended a meeting with the teacher for the first time, and her jeans, backpack, and Panama hat indicated that she was an avid traveler of warm countries. But she herself no longer doubted. Now, the destinations of her tourism would be the cities where the Keeper of Knowledge would be performing. Such was the impression left by this meeting.
When a person is at the peak of love, compassion, and grace, Maria, they immediately start seeing the world in a completely different way. You look at events or people and understand. This is how it really is. How did I not realize this before? This happens because God has transmitted his vision to you. That's his help. If you experience such a state during prayer, it means you have made contact with the higher.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Your words have touched my heart deeply. I understand. Can I ask one more little question? I pray every morning and evening before bed, as if I am setting a program for myself that in the morning I will get up and start doing good deeds. So I noticed that I don't experience elevated emotions when I wake up. Does such prayer make sense? Maybe I should wake up, get physically active, and only then turn to God.
Yes, prayer is our way of attuning ourselves to a higher state. It is very important that our body is awakened before it. If it is active, then our sensations will be stronger, and we will be able to make contact with the Creator. And at the peak of grace, that new understanding of life will come. And when the body is too passive and sluggish, prayer won't work properly. Emotions will be weak or may not appear at all. So after waking up, you can take a cold shower, do some stretching.
Demonstrating arm movements, the keeper winked at the students sitting on the grass.
The body will become lively, energetic, and receptive to elevated emotions.
Men and women smiled animatedly. The sage's words had an effect on them like an energy-boosting shower. Several people raised their hands. The master nodded to the young, short-haired brunette in a gray summer pantsuit who rarely asked questions. Being introverted and reserved, her job as a programmer left its mark. She didn't interact much with people, but today, it seemed, she had decided to speak up. Realizing that the word was given to her, the student confidently began her speech.
Teacher, did I understand correctly that faith comes from the heart, while disbelief, most likely, comes from the mind?
The woman paused and, carefully choosing her words to convey her thoughts clearly and concisely, continued.
I sometimes notice that certain thoughts creep into my mind, sometimes my own, sometimes others, which nibble on me like a worm. And because of these doubts and fluctuations, my energy drains away. At the same time, as you mentioned, my heart feels the true essence, as it truly is. Elevated emotions live right here in my heart. My question is, at what point should I disconnect my mind?
I'm glad you asked, Dina. This will be useful for everyone to know. It all starts with negative thoughts penetrating our minds. Someone said something on television, for example, that cults are bad, or they slandered someone, made up a lie on purpose for manipulation. All these ideas became the person's dark thoughts after hearing them. and now they live in him, hindering him from attuning to the higher. Therefore, my dear ones, you all must learn to reject dark thoughts.
The keeper said, with a wise smile, addressing the people sitting around.
But how can I do that, Great One? I can't control my thoughts.
Dina sadly said, lowering her gaze, as if apologizing.
You need to replace them with bright thoughts, Dina. Read spiritual teachings or spiritual books. Anyone who spreads slander and lies on screen is clearly unspiritual or spiritually low level. So why listen to them? It's better to read spiritual books, absorb the light through them, and rely on them in your life, not on lies, slander, and propaganda. The scriptures say that only the light will help us tune in and reach elevated emotions. The more darkness in our thoughts, the more negativity in our emotions, all of this will throw us off the path. And that means we will have fewer chances of contact with the light. So if a bad thought arises, don't give it much importance. Immediately replace it with a bright one. Drive darkness out of your mind, and you'll feel better.
The Master's unconditional acceptance and warmth seemed to help the disciples absorb the truth he spoke of.
Thank you, Great One. I understood everything. As soon as doubts overwhelm me, I will read about Doubting Thomas, whom you talked about today.
Dina gleamed with gratitude towards the teacher. Her large, beautiful eyes, with fluffy eyelashes, moistened. It was evident that today's meeting had been beneficial to her and had helped her resolve her tormenting issue. The keeper fell silent for a moment, rose from his seat, and, with love in his eyes, looked over his disciples, wanting to choose the next questioner himself. He approached a group of men sitting on the grass in the second row. It was evident that they had a question, and they were even quietly debating among themselves, trying to solve it independently.
What troubles you, my dear ones?
The teacher's heartfelt words encouraged the men to start a dialogue.
Bearer of truth, our beliefs state, doubt in the mind can be overcome by understanding, but doubt in the heart leads to betrayal. How can we understand this phrase correctly?
Ivan, a slightly overweight man in glasses, took the floor. He had a friendly and simple appearance, but his calloused hands revealed that he was a rural dweller.
Doubt, Ivan, arises in the heart when a person is overwhelmed by negative emotions. Take offense, for example. The teachings say we must forgive another person. But a person, let's say, holds on to the offense. No, I'd rather die than stop being offended. Offense is more important to me than life. They concentrate on this negative emotion, live by it, thinking that there's no other way to react. The emotion of offense is fueled by the lie that they were treated unfairly. They sincerely believe that their reaction is appropriate, and therefore, they don't hear the teachings. We forgive to eliminate this negativity, to remove the ground from negativity and lies that whisper, "You shouldn't forgive. Keep getting offended. You're right." And as long as a person listens to this whisper and agrees with it, they become a pawn in the hands of dark powers. But if they start listening to the scriptures, which speak of forgiveness, and then forgive the offender, light will immediately arise in their soul, and negative emotions will disappear. Elevated emotions will surface, and their connection with the higher will be restored.
Thank you, Master.
The men thanked in unison. Ivan's face showed joy. It was evident that in the conversation he defended this point of view. The other debaters had a contemplative look. Some were bewildered, some surprised, and some gained insight into how to change their lives.
Great Keeper, please tell us, how are faith and trust interconnected?
A deep, beautiful, melodious voice belonged to a middle-aged woman wearing a wide-brimmed hat. She was always well-groomed and elegant, and even for this meeting in the park she had brought a beautiful handbag and a parasol cane and was sitting on a decorative woven rug instead of the grass.
Is trust impossible without faith, or is faith impossible without trust?
Trust, Elsa, translates as before faith, meaning faith doesn't exist yet, but the person is already open to the light. And it's in this sincere state that faith can arise. Because when they try to find the path, they establish contact with the divine.
The master understood how important it was for Elsa and the other disciples to have a deep understanding of faith and put all his energy into conveying this.
First, there's trust, openness, sincerity that lead us to the path, then contact with God, and only then true faith can emerge.
Thank you, great sage. I can feel my mind clearing up. I seem to start to understand.
Elsa's eyes sparkled with joy.
But then I have another question, if you don't mind, about communicating with students. If, during a conversation, it turns out that one of them lacks self-belief, how can we help them? How can we instill self-belief? Load them with strong affirmations that everything will work out for them. Send them to a seminar?
Disbelief in oneself arises from a person identifying themselves with something negative. They cling to their grudges, laziness, or other harmful habit, and don't want to let go because it requires effort. They believe they don't have faith in themselves, but in reality, they need to let go of those negative qualities, negative emotions, or negative thoughts they are holding on to. And they will immediately gain strength, faith, and the ability to grow. Holding on to negativity is indeed disbelief. Such a person needs to be shown that clinging to the negative hinders them from moving towards the light and attaining a happy state. So you should tell them, let go, or you will never find happiness. The negative is blocking your path. In reality,
the teacher lowered his voice slightly as if revealing a great secret.
Everyone wants to be happy, but they have become accustomed to being unhappy and do everything to preserve their unhappiness, holding on to things to which a sick society has accustomed them. So, dear Elsa, just tell those you are concerned about. Realize that to become happy, you must stop holding on to the negative and bad.
Thank you, bringer of knowledge. Now I know what to do.
Teacher, may I please ask?
A petite, young, charming girl of about 18 raised her hand. She even stood up to make herself more visible and audible, using her hand to hold her long, smooth chestnut hair that a light breeze was trying to tousle.
The world is currently in such an unpredictable moment. Everything can end in an instant. Every moment can be our last.
All the disciples froze as Olivia touched upon a topic that concerned everyone. Pain and worry for loved ones, friends, and acquaintances tormented their hearts.
Am I correct in understanding that the dark powers are battling the light for the soul of every person, and right now we may all be experiencing provocations?
A young student raised perhaps the most important question of the day.
My dear Olivia, I hear your voice trembling and see panic on your face. You worry about the future, which puts you in a state of paralysis.
The keeper stood up from his seat and slowly crossed the clearing, closing the distance between himself and the girl.
That's right,
she confirmed.
I also remember how important it is in what state we pass on to the next incarnation. I'm afraid it could happen at any moment, and I won't be ready.
Her eyes filled with tears. From the majestic figure of the teacher, in a long black chiton, who had come very close to Olivia, there emanated such grace and calmness that gradually the shoulders of the girl, who was trying to stifle quiet sobs, stopped trembling. She felt like she was under invisible protection. After a minute of silence, during which she regained her composure and, feeling calmer, sat down on the grass, the master addressed everyone present.
My beloved disciples.
He held his gaze on each one and seemed to embrace the whole group with his warm energy, which transformed their tension and pain into a state of acceptance, and their bodies relaxed.
Indeed, now is the moment of the most significant test for each person. whether their spiritual attunement is strong enough to maintain elevated emotions despite anything.
Help us. Teach us on how to pass this spiritual test of the divine.
Elisaveta, usually a very active, red-haired, middle-aged woman in a bright green jumpsuit, who had come here with her twin sister, spoke barely audibly.
It's essential right now not to think about oneself, Lisa, but about other people. For example, pray for your sister, Nadia. When we start praying for other people, for the whole world, that's when we experience the most elevated state, and we begin to progress rapidly. But if we only think about ourselves and isolate ourselves, we descend into a low negative state, becoming selfish and separating ourselves from people, the world, and God.
At first, Lisa listened to the master with a slightly downcast look, but the more she paid attention to his words, the more her heart opened, and gradually, the keeper's words began to make sense to her. Her soul was filled with compassion, care, and love.
We must pray for each other and for the entire planet,
continued the keeper of knowledge with energy.
Only in this way can we help the divine powers to prevail. Today it depends on each of us who will win this battle, the light or the dark. Will we worry only about our fate, or will we turn to God, asking for light for all?
With these words, the keeper of knowledge, in the utmost reverence, folded his hands in front of his chest, closed his eyes, and entered into prayer. Lisa and Nadia, followed by all the other disciples, followed his example. A gracious silence fell over the clearing, and the air seemed to sparkle. It was an invisible perfection, felt in the heart. Divine energy initially filled the bodies of the people, then, along with their prayers, extended beyond them, first enveloping the clearing, then the park, spreading further and further. When everyone opened their eyes and was ready for further conversation, a young man with a graceful appearance and long curly hair, tied in a bun at the back of his head, addressed the master. The sun-tanned hue of his skin contrasted with the white, spacious linen clothes he was wearing, adorned with layered Rudraksha beads.
Teacher, I also have a question about the trial sent to us from above. May I ask?
Of course, Constantine.
The teacher knew that this earnest and inquisitive young man, with his keen and penetrating gaze, was meticulous in his quest for answers, always trying to translate what he heard from the teacher into practice, making changes in his life, constantly working on himself and growing. Receiving a nod from the keeper, the young man continued.
In the scriptures, it is often said, I will test your faith. So does the teacher or the supreme power test a person's faith, and the more faith they have, the more they reveal some siddhis or superhuman abilities. How do these tests work? Are difficult tasks given to determine if a person's faith is genuine? Does this mean that the divine needs to test a person to reveal more to them?
It was clear that the topic raised by Constantine had also piqued the interest of other disciples, and some of them nodded in agreement with his question.
Yes, God sends us trials, testing us on the path of perfectioning. Scriptures tell the story of the righteous Job, who is blameless, upright, and God-fearing, and he turned away from evil.
The master began his tale of the servant of God. There was a ringing silence in the air. The attention of all present was focused on the teacher's narrative, as through his words, they were discovering new truths and experiencing profound emotions.
And one day, Satan questioned his faith and said to God that Job believed in him only because God had blessed him with a good life. He had a lot of cattle, and his family was well. Satan wondered if Job would still believe in God if he took all these blessings away. God replied, "All right, take away everything from him, except his life." So Satan orchestrated events that caused Job to lose everything he had. His family, wife and children, his home, his health, material wealth, and his social standing. "Curse God and die," his wife demanded, while his friends unjustly condemned him, thinking that he must be sinful to suffer such hardship. However, despite all these heavy trials, the righteous man still held on to his faith. He passed the test.
In the hall there was a roar of approval and admiration.
My beloved disciples, remember this. Feel it in your hearts. A person's faith is tested through adversity. For example, when you hear slander, persecution, or propaganda against the school, that is precisely when your faith is being tested. If you succumb to all this, begin to doubt God. It means your faith is weak and unstable. It means you believed only when everything was going well. Perhaps you want to know how the story of Job ended?
The master turned to the men and women who were listening with bated breath to every word, and he answered his own question, saying,
Job held on to his faith, and for that, God rewarded him, restoring everything that Satan had taken away from him.
When the sage finished speaking, there was silence in the air. It seemed as if the heartbeat of each person on the clearing could be heard. The keeper noticed that the profound truth touched not only Constantine, who had asked the question. Everyone present was immersed in deep contemplation. The faces of the disciples expressed various emotions: surprise, confusion, happiness, and bliss. Many had tears of realization shining in their eyes. It was evident that this parable had opened their eyes to the essence, understanding the very meaning of life, and an extraordinary clarity had entered their souls.
Thank you, Master. I understand now,
Constantine whispered softly, his eyes filled with tears and a lump in his throat.
I've heard this parable before, but only now has its depth truly touched my soul. This story teaches us humility. Losing everything, becoming an outcast, Job endured this trial, fully surrendering to his fate and to God. It also teaches forgiveness. He forgave his wife and friends, who not only didn't support him, but caused him more pain.
Exactly, Constantine,
affirmed the sage, nodding approvingly.
But most importantly, what we must grasp is that it's not anger, but faith in God that brings happiness to a person.
Great keeper of knowledge, I have no words to express how grateful I am for this parable,
suddenly exclaimed young Olivia, the one who had asked about reincarnation. It was clear that she couldn't contain her emotions.
I feel like I've just awakened. Suddenly, it struck me that I'm constantly dissatisfied with something, that there's always something lacking for my happiness. I catch myself thinking that I'm constantly demanding privileges from the world. How ungrateful I am.
The girl blushed from her realization and even covered her face with her hands. She wasn't alone in her enlightenment. All the men and women there felt a sense of guilt for their daily complaints to God and their lack of gratitude.
Thank you, great teacher, for sharing all these truths with us. We are so fortunate to touch upon the knowledge of the spiritual community.
Constantine expressed the collective feeling, his voice trembling with emotion. Olivia's emotional outburst and Constantine's piercing words seemed to have released a dam, and all the feelings bubbling within others also poured out. Tears of remorse and a flood of gratitude for the teacher, the school, and God filled the entire clearing. The keeper of knowledge watched his disciples with tenderness. Their eyes sparkled, and their souls were wide open to goodness and delight. The sage understood that after realizing they had been living in constant complaints to God instead of gratitude, they would never be the same. This was a new, magical experience for them. Satisfied with the changes that had taken place, the master embraced his students with the warmth of his love and invited them to continue the conversation, giving the floor to another disciple.
Teacher, I have a neighbor, a good woman in general, but she says I can't do it about everything.
A woman in her 70s, dressed in a beautiful long dress adorned with delicate embroidery, spoke up. Despite her age, she was a regular listener, often asking questions in her quest to grasp all the important meanings the keeper talked about.
Listening to you, I now understand that she simply doesn't want to make any effort or change anything in her life.
The woman's voice carried genuine curiosity, a desire to get to the truth. And she eagerly awaited the sage's response.
You are right, Catherine.
The keeper of knowledge gently replied, smiling faintly. He was deeply touched by his disciple's sincere attempts to grasp the essence of things.
Her phrase, I can't do it, means leave me alone. I just don't want to. The thing is, your acquaintance has latched on to something negative and doesn't want to let it go. She doesn't realize that she's holding on to a stone that's dragging her down. Moreover, her negative thoughts and emotions, her tendency to associate events with something negative, have become familiar to her, and she wants to preserve them.
Yes, yes,
confirmed Catherine.
She always says, I've been raised to expect the worst since childhood. That's how my mom lived and my grandmother. And nothing happened. We survived. I don't want anything else. I want to live like everyone else.
Tell your acquaintance, look, you're saying you want to live like everyone else. Well, take a look. Everyone around is unhappy, living in suffering and agony. And with each passing day, their lives are getting worse and worse. It's a complete degradation. Is that what you're aiming for? Do you really want things to be truly good? Let go of your negative thoughts. Move towards personal growth. Towards the light.
You're absolutely right, Keeper of Knowledge. The problem is that she thinks everything in her life is normal and as it should be. I don't understand how to convince her,
said Catherine, sighing.
Yes, and my nephew, still very young at 25, is living off his parents, refusing to work, and he doesn't see anything wrong with it either,
added Dennis, a middle-aged man with a reddish beard and wearing light clothing. He had a calm and welcoming expression, and a clear sense of humility that showed in his gaze, movements, and soft tone of voice.
Isn't laziness a vice as well?
That's correct, Catherine, so it is, Dennis. I can see that both of you are asking not out of idle curiosity, but with a sincere desire to help these people.
The Keeper of Knowledge looked at them questioningly. The man and the woman nodded, confirming their intent.
The individuals you've described are buffering. When someone says, I don't want to do something, I don't want to grow, they are in a very low state. To emerge from this state, it's important to make at least a small effort. For example, they could stop thinking only about themselves and pray for others. As soon as they let go of their negativity, grace and happiness will instantly manifest. There's an immediate transformation. When the light enters the soul, it becomes harder for a person to cling to negativity. There's a chance that they won't want to dive back into the darkness and will start seeking ways to do good on their own, to bring back the state of light. Tell them this, and perhaps they will understand that their programs, habits, thoughts, and emotions are hindering them from experiencing God's grace.
The man and woman immersed themselves in thought. How could they convey these words to the hearts of these people? But the teacher's response to the next question, posed by the tall, gray-haired man with a prominent, strong chin, hinted at what they should do.
Teacher,
Simon addressed the Keeper of Knowledge. His clear speech, upright posture, and straight spine revealed his background as a retired military man.
Am I correct in understanding that faith is built on love? If a person with their own convictions doesn't love and someone asks them to do something, they will insist that it's impossible and nothing will work for them. But when they love, they will act even against their I can't, against all their beliefs, they will start trying. I felt this within myself as I listened to you and followed your guidance. And I also think that this is how faith is nurtured.
Love is a magnificent thing, Simon. If a person truly loved, they would already be in a very elevated state. I see the unspoken question in your eyes. How can one come to a state of love?
The teacher addressed everyone and placed his hand on his chest. Everyone on the meadow mimicked his gesture.
The first step is to cultivate positive, enlightened thoughts. For instance, why do we live? Why do all people suffer? How can we free ourselves from suffering? Buddha's starting point was precisely this. He saw that people were suffering and began contemplating what the purpose was. He resolved to find a way out of this predicament. For 12 years, he dedicated himself to development, meditating, engaging in spiritual practices, and ultimately discovering the answers. Start with the right thoughts. What is the point of all this? Why do we suffer? Why is there a war going on now? What is happening on Earth in general? Can we remain calm and continue going with the flow when nuclear bombs are about to start exploding? How can we keep believing in a society that is leading to such terrible events? How can we continue living according to its programs? Where are we all heading? When a person starts contemplating like this, they will come to the conclusion that they need to develop, seek help from the higher powers, and turn to faith. Then, love will be born within them. When I say love, I don't mean self-love, attachment to children or relatives, but rather a genuine, profound feeling, love for all that exists in this world. This is a high state, a sublime emotion. And as soon as it arises, as I've mentioned before, a person begins to see the truth and understands how to proceed.
Thank you, dear keeper.
Simon, like many sitting nearby, for the first time, realized with surprise that the first step on the path to divine love is contemplating the meaning of life. The sage cast a glance at the men and women on the meadow. They were in a state of serenity, their eyes gleaming with gratitude for the knowledge they had received. The evening was descending. The peach-orange twilight sky harmonized with the atmosphere prevailing on the meadow. The faces of the men and women were pensive. After the teacher's words, each person delved into their own thoughts, pondering true love and how to attain it. Meanwhile, David, the young man in the orange robe who had been gazing intently into the distance, where misty mountains were barely visible on the horizon, apparently inspired by contemplating them, raised his hand again and posed this question.
Dear teacher, please tell me, do more intelligent beings feel it when lower level beings address them? For instance, if a person summons the spirit of a mountain, does the mountain sense it?
Of course, David. Telepathy is possessed by all entities existing outside the physical level, both the radiant spirits, the souls of departed humans, and even the dark spirits. The moment we mentally direct our thoughts towards them, they already know what we want, what we're thinking, and what we're feeling. And naturally, they immediately understand whether a person is good or bad, where they are headed, and what they intend to do. When our soul inhabits the physical body, all such abilities that existed in the subtle level are disabled. Abilities like teleportation across vast distances, the capability to travel to other worlds, and much more. But most importantly, the ability to feel God. As soon as a person dies, their soul starts perceiving everything entirely differently, and once again feels the Creator, because there, it's an undeniable reality, just like seeing, hearing, or touching in our physical world. It thinks, why did I not feel God at all during my entire life? But the thing is, while a person lives on Earth, these truths are hidden from them. This is intended to prompt them to make efforts to break free from the state of ignorance they are in, and to acquire the strength and abilities their soul possesses. That's precisely the purpose of our life on Earth. Therefore, when we address the Radiant Ones, they immediately read our essence, respond to our call, and assist us. By the way, sometimes angels even intervene without our knowledge, trying to give us guidance. Don't do this. Do it this way. Go in another direction. But more often than not, people are deaf and blind to these signs. unfortunately.
Why is that?
The student raised his eyebrows in surprise.
Because we were trapped in our thoughts, entangled, and stuck there.
Sadness appeared on the keeper's face.
We dig into the programs we've either implanted in ourselves or were imposed on us from childhood. Angels are calling out to us, but we don't hear them. We only hear ourselves. Or another scenario. Often a person lives by the motto, I already know everything. I understand everything. I got it all. Why should I pray to God? But what does this person truly know? Only the zombie program that's been fed to them, along with misconceptions and ignorance. They're convinced that they're always right about everything. Such self-assuredness is the most destructive. Such a person is closed off, deaf, and blind. They don't hear what the spirits are telling them. On the contrary, following these programs, they run into trouble and become pawns of the dark powers. Try to pray. Lord, have mercy, Lord. Enlighten, angels, spirits of light. Help me, guide me. Open your heart and mind, and you'll receive the necessary guidance. Only in a searching, open state can you easily hear the voices of higher powers.
We've talked about this today already, but may I clarify? What does it mean to be open?
The young man who had been attentively hanging on every word of the sage asked.
Observe. What state am I in right now? Am I once again under the influence of programs, or am I open to the divine? You know, David, when Solomon ascended to the throne, he prayed, Lord, grant me wisdom to govern your people, acknowledging his lack of wisdom and the impossibility of managing without God. And then the Creator granted him wisdom. Likewise, we must open ourselves, pray to God so that he enlightens us, turn to higher powers to guide us, invoke the angels to provide us with guidance. Only if we maintain such a state will the light lead us. Therefore, every minute, we must look within ourselves. What's happening inside me right now? Am I in a closed or open state? Am I praying to God? And if not, we must readjust ourselves, and then the radiant powers will help us develop, guiding us on the true path to God's grace.
The words of the Keeper of Knowledge inspired those gathered on the meadow so much that no one wanted to disperse. The disciples were not ready to end the conversation at this moment. Joy, reverence, admiration, and happiness filled them with every passing moment spent in the presence of the Great One.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.